You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.
Welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Thursday, the 27th of April, 2023, and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, streaming at radioalbion.com. It's Thursday, so that means we have with us geopolitical analyst Dr. Matthew Raphael Johnson from russjournal.org. Matt, good day, sir. How are you doing?
How am I doing? Well, that depends to whom you compare me. And I am better than a lot of people. Worse than a handful. So not doing too badly. This is a very depressing topic today. So, you know, I'm trying to lighten the mood.
Well, I think that's a very good answer, actually, isn't it? You know, it depends on the observer. How are you doing today? An answer there from quantum physics. Well, today we're going to be talking about Sudan, which is particularly in the news because war appears to have broken out over there. But much as I've tried, I haven't been able to actually find out what the cause of this has been. All they've been talking about on the news is about trying to get people out, the fact that ceasefires aren't working. And I thought what we could do today is look into this and find out exactly what is going on in Sudan. And I know that you've spoken about Sudan before, Dr. Johnson, a couple of podcasts that you've made about one of the leaders of Sudan. So hopefully that's going to come in handy here. And we are taking our notes for today from globalresearch.ca, and the author is Abayomi Azikiwe. And he says, during the days leading up to Saturday, April 15th, there were indications of a possible showdown between the two official military structures in the Republic of Sudan. The Sudanese Armed Forces, the SAF, and the Rapid Support Forces, the RSF, both claimed in the days leading up to the proposed signing of yet another transitional agreement that they were committed to a new democratic dispensation. Nonetheless, beyond the public statements by General Abdel Fattah al-Burhan of the SAF and his counterpart in what is often referred to as a paramilitary or militia formation, General Mohamed Hamdan Dagalo, also known as Hemeti, of the RSF, there were large troop movements among both structures. The date originally slated for the signing of the agreement between the military and the designated civilian leadership was postponed until after April 6th. Although the RSF is described by some elements in the international press as a militia, its leader, General Hemeti, had been appointed as the second in command of the latest iteration of the militarily dominated Transitional Sovereign Council. Hemeti has been involved in negotiations with regional and foreign governments while appearing alongside General al-Burhan as the public face of the Sudanese state. A combined effort by Hemeti and al-Burhan resulted in the toppling of the Sudanese Congress Party administration of President al-Bashir in early April 2019. The former president remains in custody as the current security crisis worsens for the majority of the people living in the country. So it seems to me here that you've got these two military people. One of them, I think it was from a militia that was originally the Janjaweed militia. So you've got two of them, and they've been running things up until now. And they were the ones that toppled the last leader, this President al-Bashir, who is the one that I think you've spoken about before, Matt. So both of them have toppled this leader, then they've set up this new government, and now it seems to me that they've both fallen out and are fighting amongst one another. Is that what's going on? Or are they fighting against the new civilian administration? Please help us to make sense of this, Matt.
You're right. I did. Now I have a 20-page paper I'm revising on General Bashir. And he was a classic example of a successful ruler, pro-Russian, I mean, he sided with Iraq during the war, many years ago. He took over in 1989 in a coup and has registered very impressive growth rates. Now, the military has to take over because it's the only national institution in a country, a huge country, that has dozens, if not hundreds, of ethnic groups. The military contains everybody, so it's really the only institution that can function. Of course, the U.S. immediately rejects any military government unless, of course, it needs it for some specific reason. It didn't have. You don't have to be a genius to realize that when a man like that disappears, and the U.S. Is the one who toppled him, they have. We'll talk about him in a minute. They have a talking head front man that they're trying to install, but that didn't work. Now, the Sudanese armed forces, remember, Bashir was a legitimately promoted general with a lot of combat experience. And because of the wealth of the country, properly stewarded for a long time by Bashir, they were able to produce a pretty professional military. And these are essentially Al-Burhan and Hemedti, both together, overthrew Bashir, largely at the behest, especially Burhan, at the behest of the United States. But things haven't worked out for the U.S. Both of these groups have about 100,000 men, almost all of whom are combat tested. But I'm not sure how they're being paid since the economy has collapsed. It was in 2011 that the U.S. demanded that whole Darfur, Southern Sudan thing was created by the U.S., and promoted all of a sudden, if you remember, a few years ago by American Hollywood. And I've always said whenever an obscure part of the world gets a lot of very sudden and massive attention, probably everything you're hearing about it is a lie. And this is no exception. Hemedti is pro-Russian. He's already said that overthrowing Bashir was an enormous mistake. And he's also from Darfur. There was no mass a massacre there, certainly no more than your typical African civil war. And in fact, while they arrested Bashir, these military men arrested Bashir, they never handed him over to the International Criminal Court, partially because it's not really a court, but no functional judicial apparatus exists in Sudan at the moment. The ICC, though, did say that they have no evidence against him. So they had to come up with something that once he was out of power, these two guys allegedly shot at the crowd that was protesting. Somehow they blame that on Bashir because it had something to do with Hemedti, who was part of, as you say, the Jawid militia. Jawid means devils on horseback. So I really doubt that's how they refer to themselves. That's more probably a media created name because it sounds very, very menacing. You can't have democratic institutions in a country that has no unity. The military was in the process of building this. And this is typical all over Africa. Darfur, of course, is drowning in not just oil, but gold. And that's how Hemedti became a relatively wealthy man, because his military apparatus was deep into that and really self-financing. So as it stands now, the U.S. does not accept Hemedti at all. But maybe Al-Burhan, at least for the time being, his forces have been armed by the West for many years now. Sudan was cut in half in 2011. South Sudan was created, that is drowning in oil. And American companies went in there. That was the whole point of it. You know, you're allowed to have your own country so long as we run it. But the government there, completely turned on the U.S. and had Russian and Chinese firms. China has a naval base close by in Djibouti, as does the U.S. The U.S. pressured Russia because they wanted – that was the whole Somali pirate idea. So this comes down to the access to resources and access to the Gulf of Aden, which leads out into the Indian Ocean. So Sudan is an extremely extremely significant country, and no one knows anything about it. So the media could say whatever they please. This article is a good one because it gets into some detail as to who's financing who. But Sudan, being so close to the Middle East, but being in East Africa, having the military that it does, having deep ties with the Arab League, Saudi Arabia, the UAE, the coup that just took place was backed by the Arab League to a great extent. It shouldn't surprise you that Turkey was a part of that too. Not a part of the coup, but supporting it. So this has really just been one panic attack after another for the U.S. The headquarters of the African CIA is in Kenya, just to the south. And Uganda also is an American, essentially an American, has American soldiers in it. The U.S. is not going to get involved in this militarily, but rather they send weaponry to whoever they think is going to give American firms access to resources. I have the feeling that they knew. I mean, the minute South Sudan was proclaimed in 2011, the two main ethnic groups started slaughtering each other. I can't imagine they didn't know that would happen. And once Bashir was gone, the army split into these two factions, both well-financed, or at least Hamedi's is. Al-Burhan has a lot of Egyptian contacts, since they're all part of the Nile Basin, which is a huge deal, and it connects all the countries in that area. But not being able to get their figurehead, guy Abdallah Hamdok, into power, the U.S. has to deal for the moment with a military apparatus, but one that doesn't have the legitimacy or the popularity that Bashir had. And an economy that was doing extremely well under Bashir now is fifth world status, where you can't even get clean water or any kind of medical assistance in the capital city of Khartoum. Now, the last I heard, they released Bashir from prison, and he's at one of the functional hospitals somewhere in the capital city, which has come under pretty intensive bombardment recently. Nothing works. Utilities are gone. Everything that Bashir had built up is gone. And it would be a disaster for the U.S., but probably a good thing if they release him entirely and he's able to take over again, because that's the only chance they have.
So this is basically the fallout of them taking out this general. And I remember when they were sort of trumpeting this about this new country that had been built, South Sudan, and there was going to be peace. The fact that they had created this country in the south, that meant that there was going to be peace between the south and the north. And obviously that isn't what's happened. Getting back to the article here, the initial Sovereign Council represented a coalition of leaders from the Forces for Freedom and Change, the FFC, which grew out of the demonstrations and rebellions beginning in December 2018, combined with the military leadership. During the period between the establishment of the original Sovereign Council in mid-2019 to the coup of December 2021, led by the military, an interim Prime Minister, Abdallah Hamdok, served as a figurehead to the transitional structure. After being held under house arrest by the generals, Hamdok was reinstalled by the military as Prime Minister, where he served for several weeks until he finally resigned. All during this period, the resistance committees continued to hold mass demonstrations demanding the immediate transition to civilian rule. The suppression by the military of the rights of mass organisations to hold demonstrations and participate equally within the national dialogue made many people domestically and outside the country highly sceptical about the intentions of both the RSF and SAF. After the announced postponement of the renewed political agreement, the power dynamics were such that fierce fighting erupted in key areas of Sudan, a nation with a population of 47 million. In the capital of Khartoum, there are clashes surrounding the presidential palace, the military headquarters, international airport, and other areas. There are also reports of clashes between the RSF and SAF around the strategic Port Sudan on the Red Sea, along with Mero in the north of the vast country. Several Egyptian Air Force personnel stationed at the airport in Mero were detained by the RSF. There were claims that the home of the European Union envoy was attacked by the RSF, says the SAF in a press statement. A convoy of United States diplomatic personnel were also fired upon in their vehicles during the third day of the fighting. Sudanese, speaking from inside the capital of Khartoum, say that their power has been disconnected since April 15th, the first day of the clashes. One woman said her household had a solar-powered battery, which allowed the family to recharge their mobile phones. There are critical shortages of food and water in the capital and other areas. Reports indicate that many hospitals have been evacuated due to safety concerns. There have been two failed attempts at a temporary ceasefire to allow a humanitarian corridor where the injured could leave the capital of Khartoum. Another point we should bring up here as well is that this is a huge country and it borders lots of other countries. I think Libya and Chad and Egypt. So it has connections to all these other countries. That's another reason why it's so important, because it's in the middle there. You have to go through Sudan to get to these other countries. What do you make of what's being said here, Matt?
Well, the figurehead I mentioned is Hamdok. Of course, he's educated in the West. I think he went to the University of Manchester. And most, you can really tell whose side someone is in these so-called color revolutions by where they were educated. The two generals in power were both educated locally. The pro-American types are educated abroad. One of the former presidents of South Sudan went to USC. They're tightly connected with the United States, and especially the intelligence apparatus. But Hamdok didn't have the support. He didn't have the force to make his rule even remotely plausible. The whole point of installing him, the U.S., we'll get into this more in a minute concerning Israel and oil and gold, and allowing the U.S. to do whatever it wants. And both of these generals are well aware that that's the idea. The battle in the major port city, it should be, that's of course where they're going to be fighting. Port Sudan is a multi-billion dollar operation, or at least it was a multi-billion dollar operation. And the fact that a lot of these guys, after the fall of Bashir, were still inviting the Russians in. I mean, Bashir, one of the reasons that he had to go, according to the U.S., is that not only was he pro-Iranian, anti-Zionist, but he invited the Russian military in on the same grounds as Assad did. And, this new government does not trust the U.S., knows what Hamdok is, and they're doing the same thing. Unfortunately, the instability in South Sudan is such that the Chinese Petroleum Corporation, who had set up shop there against the wishes of the U.S., can't do as much as it wants because of the endless instability. South Sudan, I believe, is one of the poorest countries in the world. It's a total failed state immediately upon its foundation. And it wasn't, it was just presented in the news as this great victory for democracy. It is true that Sudan proper, which is now a rump Sudan, is mostly Islamic and Arabic speaking. South Sudan is mostly Christian. But as far as Bashir was concerned, he had men in all of those areas serving in the army. And that the war there, like Darfur, Hemedti's from Darfur, they were armed by the United States. And these wars are completely artificial. But when you consider can you imagine a huge country like Sudan, pro-Iranian, pro-Russian, pro-Chinese, becoming the first world country in Africa after South Africa, and that's exactly where he was headed, and that's why Israel has been a huge part of the coup here. Israel has agents all over the place, and with the semi pro-American government in Egypt after their color revolution, they're supporting, of course, the American side in this. And these political meetings are all mediated by the United States. Israel has offered to mediate. And this is why these two factions, despite all their disagreement, are united on not trusting anybody. So, but this Hamdok, we'll talk about him more in a little bit, really goes to the heart of why this had to happen as far as the West is concerned. This slaughter, none of these famines, no access to water, power outages, none of that existed under Bashir. And because of American meddling, yet again, you have a rapidly developing country that now is at the door of the fourth world.
Well, three employees of the World Food Programme, the WFP, were killed and two others were injured during clashes between the RSF and the SAF in the northern Darfur region. In regards to the detention of the Egyptian Air Force technicians, the Sudan Tribune said, "The Rapid Support Forces announced on Wednesday, April 19th, that the 27 military officers and technicians of the Egyptian Air Force, who were arrested in Meroe last Saturday, will be released as soon as possible. The RSF had stormed the military airbase where the military trainees had been stationed 5 days prior. The RSF released a video on Wednesday showing an officer standing with two Egyptian officers and the other detainees sitting on the ground of a large room. The militia officer announced that all the detainees had been transferred to Khartoum and were unharmed. One of the Egyptian officers stated that they were safe and would return to their home country probably today. The RSF also released a statement confirming that all Egyptian military personnel present at the Meroe base are safe. Egypt has maintained a solid relationship with Sudan over the years. President Abdel Fattah al-Sisi is a former military leader who later ran and became head of state after leading a coup against the previous government of Muslim Brotherhood member President Mohamed Morsi. After the uprising of 2011, a national election was held the following year, resulting in the ascendancy of the Muslim Brotherhood. Morsi only served as president for 1 year until the coup in June 2013, and Morsi was imprisoned where he died several years later. The military forces in Egypt and Sudan are heavily entrenched in the administrative apparatus of the states. Therefore, it is not surprising that there has been tremendous resistance in Khartoum and Cairo against the realization of democratic rule. So how else does Egypt play into this, Matt? Do you know?
The so-called color revolution there that toppled Mubarak, who had been there for a long time, partly was done to stop the connection between Bashir and Egypt. Now you've had nothing but instability there since that so-called revolution. But the military, which in both countries is still very popular, was the only institution that could actually ever be even remotely representative, because I think everyone was in it. Egypt doesn't have this problem as much as Sudan does. It's irrelevant now because Sudan has been cut in half. Morsi, despite being from the Muslim Brotherhood, was educated in the United States. And I forget exactly where. But and the U.S. does make these deals with al-Qaeda and creating ISIS and the Muslim Brotherhood to get rid of the secular nationalist leaders, someone like, for example, Saddam Hussein or Assad or Bashir, so as to not mobilize the country and develop rapidly. Most of these leaders, I mean, before the war, Assad was on the door of the first world. Same thing for Iraq, although in Saddam Hussein's case, he was constantly at war, so we really don't know how he would have done normally. And the ironic thing, and I'm not sure ironic is the right word, but al-Bashir wanted to retire. He said he's going to step down in 2020. But all that would mean is that his National Congress Party, which has been banned by the United States, what a shock, just like the Ba'ath Party in Iraq, would have won a substantial number of the local elections. So that had to be broken up and destroyed. Because of the ridiculous diversity in Sudan prior to 2011, Bashir had a decentralized federalist system where, in Darfur, for example, locals were serving there. It had an independent court system. They satisfied every demand, but that wasn't enough. The United States needed the gold and oil. South Sudan is the location of 80% of Sudan's oil. Darfur also has oil, which is – Darfur today is part of regular Sudan, the three, north, south, whatever. And without any evidence, they're accusing Bashir of war crimes here. But the person who allegedly did it is Hamedi himself. And the whole thing is really silly. But this is all a completely artificial war. So the U.S. is working via Egypt to support, at least for now, the Sudanese armed forces. And again, as I said, I don't know how these guys are being paid. I think I know how the other group is paid, but I'm not sure how the Sudanese armed forces, because there's no money. There's nothing there. I hate to think that they're simply taking from the population. But again, none of this would have happened had Bashir been allowed to step down in 2020.
Well, there has been considerable diplomatic attention paid to the Republic of Sudan by several African Union member states for obvious reasons. Sudan, prior to its partition in 2011, was the largest geographic nation state on the continent. The vast country shares borders with seven other African states, making it a gateway to northern, eastern, and central regions of the continent. Sudan is rich with oil, natural gas, and gold. The port of Sudan on the Red Sea is the focus of a planned development project involving the Russian Federation, RSF leader, and the former deputy within the military-dominated Transitional Sovereign Council, General Hemeti, travelled to Moscow in February 2022, where he held high-level discussions with the Russian Federation leaders. A stable, democratic, and progressive government in Sudan could make a powerful contribution to the overall struggle for African unity and development. With the adoption of the African Continental Free Trade Area by many states throughout the continent, Sudan, utilizing its natural wealth and strategic geographic location, would play an indispensable role. It is for this reason that the imperialist states and their allies within the Gulf region have, over the years, interfered in the internal affairs of the country. The previous president, Omar Hassan al-Bashir, had faced sanctions as well as indictments issued by the Netherlands-based International Criminal Court. So we see here that it's a very interesting place. It's got like all of these borders there. It's got all this resources there, and you see that they were working with Russia, and that's that. You know, that's the red flag there, isn't it, Matt? You know, General Hemeti is traveling to Moscow for a planned development project with the Russian Federation, and that really sort of marks them out for American interference straight away, doesn't it?
Yeah, and I said before that. It's his opponents in the Sudanese armed forces that the U.S. is betting on. Democracy, in this case, only means, and this author's being silly about it, but democracy means a weak state run by an American-educated prime minister that will then open the entire country to exploitation. And that goes for Israel, especially, who's frothing at the mouth with all of this. We'll talk about them in a minute, because this money that the opposition got came with a few strings. And it's an outrage, and of course no one's really talking about this except on this website. As far as the ICC indictment, the first one was ripped up because there was no evidence. This pretty much came from Hollywood more than anywhere else. And the second one, as I already mentioned, occurred only after Bashir had stepped down, because he helped, you know, of course he was the Sudanese armed forces, as well as the Janjaweed militia, who was genuinely popular in the region. That's enough to say that he's indirectly responsible for whatever happened. The only massacres that occur are after American intervention. And the same thing goes for South Sudan. But so far, this hasn't worked out for the U.S. because one of the people who they were going to bet on, the second in command, that is to say, Hemeti, has gone to the Russians and to the Chinese. That's why the U.S. really needs to stoke the fires of warfare to keep any of this from happening. And Egypt is important to that, at least as far as the U.S. is concerned. As I mentioned, in Kenya is where the CIA is headquartered in Africa. So this is, you know, this is why all of a sudden you had this Darfur nonsense and it became a household name. Johnson's Law is very much – there's actually a corollary to Johnson's Law, as I've already mentioned. But they play on public ignorance. But there are no war crimes pending against Bashir, at least of any substance. The ICC is not a court in the normal sense. They have no rules of evidence. It's totally politicized. This is like Nuremberg. It's non-judicial. It just serves the interest of the West, and it's essentially the judicial arm of NATO. But the sanctions that the U.S. had placed on Bashir were ignored throughout the Middle East. It was simply too powerful of a country and growing too rapidly to ever listen to. Back then, Jordan, the UAE, Oman completely ignored it. The Arab League, as well as the African Union completely rejected these sanctions. It just wasn't working. And that's why the U.S. then had to support U.S. and Israel, had to create these protests, had to create these military factions and arm them and even train them, and to create a new state in South Sudan solely for American interests. But even down there, it isn't working out for them.
Well, even prior to the ascendancy of al-Bashir as the head of state in 1989 as a result of a military coup, the U.S. sought to secure Sudan as a willing or unwilling partner in the desire to maintain global hegemony. Under the previous U.S. administration of President Donald Trump, interim Prime Minister Hamdok, during 2020, was pressured into accepting the normalization of relations between Khartoum and the State of Israel. This was done despite the constitutional prohibition of such relations based upon the Israel Boycott Act signed into law in 1958, just 2 years after the national independence of the country from British imperialism. The establishment of diplomatic relations with Tel Aviv carried along with it pledges to not support terrorism. Sudan had been on the list of state sponsors of terrorism as defined by the United States. Hamdok had agreed to pay hundreds of millions of dollars from Sudanese government funds to the families of victims of terrorist attacks which did not even take place inside Sudan. All of these Western-oriented foreign policy decisions would ultimately lead to loans from the International Monetary Fund, the World Bank, amongst other Western financial institutions. Nonetheless, irrespective of which armed structure or bourgeois politicians that are favoured by Washington, it will take a united front of the masses of Sudanese workers, farmers, youth and professionals to overturn the military rule. The removal of the military as the principal governing unit within the state will provide the ability for a genuine democratic debate inside the country. The regional organisations of East Africa, along with the AU, EU, US and United Nations, are all calling for an immediate ceasefire in Sudan. In addition, these regional and international organisations have warned other states about providing support to either side in the conflict. A high-ranking military official in Sudan has accused two regional states of providing military assistance to the RSF without specifically naming them. The eruption of the internal conflict within the Sudanese military structures should serve as a warning to the AU. Efforts to unify the continent and to silence the guns must continue to be a priority for the continent and its people. Now, I'd be interested, Matt, to know your thoughts on what he was saying here about how what they need to do is go for this genuine democratic debate and remove the military. Because if it was under this general and this military rule that the country did so well, why is this person thinking it's going to be doing so much better with a civil administration? What are your thoughts?
Yeah, well, first of all, as far as something like that, these are just cliches. This guy's a pretty decent writer. I don't know if he's from there, but he's clearly African. South Sudan had a pro-American democratic government that collapsed in a few weeks. There's too much ethnic conflict here because there is a lot of money at stake. Largely, it's artificial, but the U.S. is not letting this go. And of course, the real punchline to this all, what you said in the beginning in 2020, Hamdok was allowed to take over. Weaponry was sent to his people, those who allegedly supported him, if and only if. Of course, it took the IMF and opened up the country to foreign investment. But two other things. The first was to normalize relations with Israel. And I remember the Darfur Crusade started at the U.S. Holocaust Museum. And Elie Wiesel gave the first speech, putting his alleged authority into this. That's how it became a Hollywood phenomenon. And then, of course, so-called not supporting terrorism. But what does terrorism mean to the United States or Israel? Anyone who, basically it comes down to supporting Iran. And then the so-called terrorism in the Gulf of Aden. There's only been two incidents. And the main one is the USS Cole, which was done by al-Qaeda. This was the previous act that bin Laden did in pushing a raft full of explosives out to the American ship, the USS Cole, and killed a couple dozen people. Somehow we're supposed to believe that he graduated from that to 9/11. But after the Cole, no one until all of this happened ever blamed Sudan. But I distinctly remember during the the Lockerbie, Scotland. I think that was 1988. Terror brought the plane out of the sky. When the Iraq War started a few years later, it had been, I think, Iraq that was blamed for it. But then once Sudan supported Saddam Hussein, it became a Sudanese issue. So who gets blamed for acts of so-called terrorism has a lot to do with who the U.S. is supporting at the moment. There are these labor unions that the United States created in Sudan, but they're mostly Western educated. There are a handful of them. The Democratic Veterinarians Association is actually one of them, and who probably don't have any members. I don't think Sudan is drowning in veterinarians. But given the amount of money at stake, given the mobilization necessary to put all this together to properly exploit the oil and the gold and everything else, a military government has to exist. And the only one who has the authority is still Bashir. He's not a young man anymore, but he's not in jail. And I don't know what the hospital means. It can mean a lot of things, that he's sick, or that this is really the only place for him to go. But it has, something has to happen soon, because there's no water. There's no money. There's nothing. None of this would have happened under Bashir.
Well, just a brief point there. I think on the Lockerbie incident, that was actually blamed on Libya. And right up until Gaddafi's dying day, he said it was not us that were responsible for that. And the chap that was indicted, al-Megrahi, I think he went back to Libya because he had some issue with cancer. But Gaddafi said all along that they were not responsible for Lockerbie. So obviously the British authorities said that it was Libya, but Libya said that it wasn't. So we don't really know for sure who it was that was involved in that, and maybe Sudan was involved in some way there, and maybe they got the blame for it as well. I can't recall that far back. Anyway, thank you very much for coming on today, Matt. Thank you very much, listeners, for listening. I will be back tomorrow with Grandpa Dan. God bless and hail victory.
You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.